Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Today, I'm Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. We're going to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So welcome to Live the Promise, and a very happy Tuesday to you. I was just listening to the weather report before we started, and I've heard the word sauna more than once here in the upper Midwest, Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And I don't know if that's a Turkish sauna or a Finnish sauna. Do you have any idea? Not a clue, do you, Matt? You're just giving me
a
big blank stare once again. Either way, it's going to be hot, and you have to be careful to make sure you drink lots of fluid. That would be water, and then stay in the air conditioning.
Does coffee count?
Coffee does count. Yep, but I think that's...
Then we're set.
And is that hot coffee or cold coffee in your world?
It has to be hot.
Really? Yeah,
yeah.
I think
even
so,
even on hot days, it has to be hot.
And regular coffee all day long?
Of course.
Yeah, decaf is a joke. I don't even know why they invented decaf. Decaf is never going to catch on, folks. You're never going to hear anyone say, kids, get your feet off the decaf table. Ain't going to happen. So anyway, how are you about telling stories? How good are you at telling stories? And how important are stories? And when you say, I got a story to tell, it usually draws people in versus let me share my monologue with you or let me send you to a blog. Storytelling is the most powerful thing we have, and we have access to the greatest story that's ever been told, yet we don't always do what we should do, pay attention to figuring out the very best way to tell that story, either personally or as an organization. My guest today is an expert at helping people do that. She is a business entrepreneur that started her own business, ventured into that 3 years ago. She helps people tell their stories. She does branding, and she does storytelling. And her name is Sharon Sampson, and this is her first time appearing on Live the Promise. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Now, on Live the Promise, Susie always loves to find out what's going on in people's hearts spiritually. So my number one first question would be, has God shared anything from Scripture in the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks that you want to left an impact on you that you want to share?
I think a verse that's just meant a lot to me even over the last season of starting this business is really from Galatians 5, where it talks about, if we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. And as sort of a reluctant entrepreneur who never thought she'd be starting a business and have just sought to steward what God puts in my hands, I'm daily trying to understand what it means to keep in step with the Spirit, to not get ahead of what God wants to do, to not fall behind of what God is calling me into, and to just daily rely on Him and live by that.
So, and what verse is that again?
Galatians 5:26, I believe.
I'd say we're done for the day, Matt. That's pretty much it. You know, stay in touch with what God wants you to do. Those are great words.
It requires patience and also discipline.
Yeah, as a business owner, as a person trying to launch a business and get started, I would imagine there was a million anxieties, and there's a million things you race ahead with in your brain, and you fill in the blanks to the narrative, which is something we can't do. We got to let God fill in those blanks.
That is true. I'm learning it every day. Yes.
Yeah. So we're always interested in hearing about exactly who's sitting in the studio chair. So can you give us a little journey of what your faith story is? What does it look like? Doesn't have to be long.
Yeah.
We've got till 4, so go ahead.
I grew up in a home that was centered around knowing God and being known by Him and seeking to honor Him with our lives. So that's been a part of my life as long as I can remember. But I had a grandmother who really is the one who taught me the love and power of stories. She would tell me stories from her life, and she would tell me stories from God's Word. And she would tell me stories of the importance of how God's Word has shaped her in her life. And so she was a major force that helped me to understand the love and grace and also provision of God, that He's taking us into a story for our lives. And that has been a theme throughout my faith journey. I have...
Okay, let's stop there for a minute, because I want to go back, but this grandma telling you stories...
Yes, she's the best.
Oh, my goodness, this is so cool, so powerful.
Yeah.
So she's telling you stories of her life, mm-hmm. but also stories of how God has changed her, and then stories of the Bible. So your little imagination is on fire, full of wonder about these stories that I bet you can recall all of them to this day.
Well, and I also would bring tape recorders to her house when I would visit her and tape recordings of her telling stories, and then I would listen to them when I was far away from her. She lived in West Virginia.
Wow.
And I would put them under my pillow and just replay those stories over and over.
Serious?
Yeah, it was a big part of my
That is so sweet.
Childhood. And some of my childhood friends tease me to this day that I used to say at sleepovers that someday my dream in life was to grow up and be a storyteller in Africa. And I don't know why that felt so exotic and exciting to me, but... It's ironic that I grew up and I am a storyteller, a professional storyteller, and I have been to Africa. I don't know if I can connect the two.
There you go. Connect those dots. I think you can. I say you call those friends and go, nah, 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 nah.
But she certainly planted seeds for that. Yeah.
So I think that's so powerful. And so what a legacy that she's given you. What a beautiful memory, because that's kind of all we have after we lose our grandparents is what does our mind conjure up? What when we think about them, what comes to mind? And you've actually got grandma on tape telling you stories.
Yes.
That live on in your heart. That's fascinating. Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Now, then now pause, now continue.
With the faith story
yes,
journey?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, like any of us.
Do you want to be off the hook with this, or you want to keep going?
Like any of us that has ups and downs, left turns and right turns, I've worked in the corporate world in New York City and thought I was going to be running that ladder. And then God got a hold of my heart and set me on a new path that has led to some left turns and right turns of doing campus ministry for a few years, where I think I learned there of trusting God through listening and through relying on his grace as opposed to just being a good little soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all unfolded in various ways over the last few years until I started my business 3 years ago. And that has been the biggest faith-building journey of my life.
Mm-hmm.
At age 35, I thought I'd be building a family. I didn't know that I'd be building a company. And God has just, in his goodness, opened doors and led me down paths that have shown me that he is near, that he is with me, that he has a story written for my life and for my days, and invited me to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the name of my business is Open Book, and that's... a literal sort of way of saying to organizations and clients we work with that we want to open the book and tell the story, help them tell their stories that they are living and the missions they're pursuing. But privately, it means that I'm trying to live my life as an open book in which God is the author and trusting him for each page, each step, each chapter of this story.
Yeah. And now, I know you've got a critical eye, because that's what people who do diagnostic things do, is they look at something and they go, this is how it can be better.
Hmm.
Now, when you look at church and ministry organizations and the material they put out, what percentage of them would you say are doing it well?
Oh, good grief.
I know that's a loaded question.
That
you want to go to break or something?
Question.
No.
I think there's a lot of opportunity for continued improvement is what I would say.
No, but just give me a rough number. You're not being mean or anything. You're just, you know, because I know that there's a lot of stuff you look at, and there's a lot of well-meaning churches, well-meaning parachurches, ministries, organizations that say, you know, we're not growing, we're not making a difference, we're not messaging well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at their material, is it a C, a C minus, a B minus? What would you grade it most of the time?
Oh, Bill, you're challenging me on that one. I mean, I would say...
it's the big league, Sharon.
Yes.
You're on Live the Promise.
I'd say half the time I see wins and half the time I see opportunities for improvement. But the other thing I would say, even those that tell the best stories or do it well, it's a living and breathing thing. You've got to stay after it. And so it's not like you do it once and you're done. You have to continue to press into it and provide attention to it. So it's an ongoing pursuit.
Okay. Now... I want to talk about one of the latest projects you just got done doing. I don't think it's over, but you just spent 4 days in Washington.
Yes, yeah.
And you were instrumental in directing that project, which you sat down with Nick Hall from Pulse 4 years ago across the table having a piece of pizza. And he said, this is my dream, to get to the Washington Mall and have a full day, full weekend, full event of prayer for all denominations to come together. And that happened this weekend, and you were there for 4 days. Can you get started telling us about that. We're going to take a break in a minute, but can you get started?
Sure. Nick Hall is an evangelist here in Minneapolis who felt God put a vision on his heart to have a major national event on the National Mall around Jesus. And he's been going hard after this with his amazing team for the last, really, 5 years. But for the last 4 years, I've had the privilege of being in the trenches with him to help him tell that story and to make materials and tools and talking points and websites and videos that would unveil that vision of a day where people from across the faith spectrum come together with only one agenda. There in D.C., a town of many agendas, what would it look like for one day to have one agenda and just to talk about Jesus? And that happened on Saturday, and the National Mall was filled with people of all different races and backgrounds and stories and states and coming together in one place to worship and to pray and to ask God, to ask Jesus to reset our hearts, our lives, and this generation. And it was a pretty powerful experience.
Well, I think it was last week or the last couple of weeks we had Leith Anderson on, who is the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. We had Nick on. We had Ed Stetzer on. I'm not name dropping right now, just so you know. Okay. It's not polite to name drop.
So I've heard.
Yeah. Robert De Niro told me that at Pacino's barbecue. But anyway, I want to find out a little bit about, the responsibility you feel to try to take something as big as what Nick had as a vision and say, how do we start taking these steps towards making this happen?
Because
this is everyone who's listening, who's got a dream or a ministry or a desire to grow the kingdom, are all ears right now.
Yeah. I think Nick, this whole experience was an example of Nick didn't just want something that was for him. He wanted something that was for hundreds of thousands of people. And so that required telling a story in a way that invited people to be part of it. The heartbeat at the center of this event wasn't for it to be just a outdoor music festival, but for have a sense of mission and message that's part of it, so that people would come and understand that there was something behind this, and the message was a call to know Jesus, to experience the reset that Jesus offers, and to go back to your towns and to live that out with purpose and passion. And to do that, to get that message out to the country, to put a risk on and say we're going to have a major national event, everybody come, took a lot of guts from Nick and his team. I give them so much credit for that, for their faith and prayerfulness. But it required telling that and communicating that in ways day in and day out so the people got a sense of what it's really about, to understand what it wasn't about, and to be united and called into this vision. And it's been really fun and humbling and a privilege to get to be part of that.
Great. Well, we're going to take a little break. I have a ton more questions for Sharon Sampson. So glad you joined us today on Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. We'll take a little break and be right back. We're talking about storytelling today. We're talking about how good are you at telling your story and how good is your organization at telling their story, because that's our calling, that's our responsibility, to communicate the gospel of Jesus Christ as effectively as we can, and we can't do it casually. We should be real intentional about figuring out how to develop a little personal way of sharing our faith and our story, reaching out with love and grace to others, and also that if we're going to be an organized ministry or an organized church, or we're going to be very intentional about spreading the gospel, that we should be very specific about how we tell our story and be very goal-oriented. Now, we're just talking to Sharon Sampson. She's an entrepreneur. She's a storyteller, and she has a company called Open Book based in Minneapolis, but has clients all over the country. She leaves tonight to go to New York City. She has a little client there. Can I mention?
Sure.
Yeah, just because Redeemer Church, Pastor Tim Keller's church, I know it's kind of a big one. And when you live in New York City and have a ministry there, I would assume they have access to the best talent in the world, and yet they call you in Minneapolis and fly you out. So I give up.
Anyway. No one's more surprised than me. But it's...
I get it. So I appreciate your humility. But when we're talking about just getting back to your 4 days in Washington with this event, this coming together, this Pulse event to pray, and there were lots of speakers and entertainers. There is some criticism that events like this can be a flash in the pan, a very expensive flash in the pan. What's your comment on that?
Well, I can simply say that what I've heard people who believe in the power of events, and I find it very compelling and true that in our culture, people, when we talk about stories, people tell stories of events they've gone to. Like, why do people try to get tickets to Hamilton on Broadway? Or why do people want to get tickets to Adele or Beyonce or to the Super Bowl or to the NBA playoffs? Because events are a time where people come together for marking moments and experiences that galvanize and energize and set them out with memories and with stories to tell and with ideas and experiences that shape them. And the idea that Jesus is worth that, that if it's worth coming together around a big pop star or a great performance or a great theater, all of which I believe to be true, that Jesus is worth coming around for, that he's worth the biggest stages and the biggest messages. And if people are going to have trending hashtags on Twitter, if people are going to have major commercials around topics in culture, topics in the world, topic in the news, shouldn't Jesus be part of that? Because that is the story that is the most important one to tell of all. So I've seen the power of big events in action.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about churches, organizations, parachurches, all that today, how essential is it for them to be accessing all the things you've just talked about? Like, I think of the anti-social media. I don't participate in a lot of it. Mm. I'm not on Facebook. I do have a Twitter account, which I don't use, but...
Oh, yeah, I'll follow you later.
Yeah, it's okay. But how important is it for these organizations and ministries to be, up to date?
Yeah.
How important is it?
Well, I think it's important for you to be thoughtful about how you are living out your mission and calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so for churches and ministry leaders, if they are truly feel a sense of calling that they're pursuing with their organization, with their leadership, with their lives, then they're driven to want to invite more people to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you therefore have to be thoughtful about how you're doing that. And we live in a branded world, and we're inundated with messages and brands and designs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And people do spend so much time on their devices, on social media and whatnot. And so I think it's important to be thoughtful about how you are communicating in those spectrums. I don't think that every forum is for every person, but I think you have to be thoughtful about it. And I do think that, again, coming back to the idea of stories and why I believe that's such an important touchstone for how people communicate in the ministry world or in their personal lives, is like as an organization, people can't be part of a logo. People can't be part of a website. Those are information portals.
Mm-hmm.
But people can be part of a story and a cause that's greater than themselves and a vision and a dream that draws them forward, that makes them lean in, that makes them feel something. And particularly within the idea of ministry, when we're calling people to feel things that are often intangible things, like to experience grace, to experience hope, transformation, healing. Those are complex concepts to communicate. And the way to do that is by inviting people into a shared experience around what that means. And that's where stories can be so effective. A website, brochures, print materials, videos, those are all things that my company makes and with great passion and conviction of their value.
Mm-hmm.
But we believe that they live or die in terms of their success and effectiveness to the degree which they are hinged around a message and a narrative and a story that makes people feel part of something, that makes people feel something, and that invites people forward toward mm-hmm. something beyond the horizon.
Now, Sharon, would you say it's safe to say the first door anybody comes through is going to be the door on your website?
I think websites are critical. I don't think in this day and age people have a website. I believe that however people experience you, and website is often the front door,
mm-hmm.
is their full impression of you. And so
really?
I don't think that it's a matter of like you're an organization. Oh, and we have a website, or we have a Facebook page, or we have this video that lives on YouTube. It's more that you are an organization that has these different touch points where people encounter you. And that's why I think you have to be thoughtful and strategic about being consistent and cohesive in the story you're telling and the way you're presenting who you are so that people encounter the same you no matter how they
mm-hmm.
encounter you.
Let's talk about messaging a little bit. What are a couple things people do well, and what are a couple things people do poorly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes when I hear people making pleas for resources, they start talking about, you know, they got bills to pay, and I go, well, we all have bills to pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to see what greater vision you have that I can get on board with, because that's how I think we give more cheerfully.
Mm-hmm.
So what are a couple things people do well and a couple things people do not so well?
Yeah. I think that it's really important to give people information and data and statistics, but I think that ultimately making an argument or making a case is not going to move people to give as much as unveiling a dream and a calling and invitation to be part of something bigger than themselves. So I think the cornerstone of my business approach and what I feel my calling is with my team is to help people embed mission into how they communicate and what they're saying so that people are called towards something. Mm-hmm. People are going after something. And not for their own sake, not just for the sake of using God language or mission language to get into people's wallets or pocketbooks. That's not what it's about. I'm not motivated by that. But the idea of if there truly is a mission or a vision that you're going after where you want to see lives changed and people experience grace and encounter the gospel or serve the poor or pursue justice, whatever the mission is, if you believe it's so important, it matters so much, you want to call people toward that thing. And I think too often we sell that short by just giving data points and information and making an academic argument, which has its place and its time, but I don't think that's usually the last word. Mm-hmm. I think the last word is when you speak to people's hearts and make them feel part of something beyond just themselves.
That's hard to do, though.
It is hard to do. Yeah.
That's where you have to get vulnerable and you have to take a risk. And
and you have to speak to people, not just about yourself, but to speak to people, to use words like you and invite. And that does take some thoughtfulness, but we think it's ultimately more authentic.
Okay. What are some things people do wrong? What happens when somebody comes to you and they tell you what their dream is, and you in the back of your head you're doing the big eye roll, going, "All right, I think you're nuts."
Oh gosh, well,
that must happen often.
It happens sometimes.
I want to put a coffee shop on every block in Nairobi, and that way people will come and I'll share the gospel with them.
I mean, I hear people going after big risky stuff, and those are the people I like most, not the ones I roll my eyes at. So I like the big dreamers and the risk takers. I mean, I think it's not necessarily somebody that's a good communicator or a bad communicator. I think that we all just have to be reminded to embed a sense of mission and vision into it. So you mentioned Tim Keller. Tim Keller is a world-class communicator. There are a few preachers and speakers in the world that I hold in higher regard in terms of their ability to communicate the gospel truth. However, it's been our privilege to come alongside Tim through a vision that he's unveiling for gospel renewal in New York City, and to be the partner alongside him to whisper in his ear and say, it's not just about making an argument. It's not just about giving the facts. It's about saying something with a spirit of song that lifts spirits, that points people to something beyond themselves. Mm. And he's a world-class communicator, but we think we all need help to embed a sense of song and vision, because it's just very easy to go back into our default of just stating, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. That's a reporting of facts. Mm-hmm. Or we want to do this, then we want to do this, then we want to do this. That's a reporting of intention. But when you say, this happened, and this is what it means, and this is what it's going to accomplish, and this is how it's going to change things, that's a story. And that's what you want to see told.
So, and it's not even a fine line. There's quite a distance between those two, isn't there? I mean, even as you were just saying, there's facts and data. Mm-hmm. And that sounds boring to me as I'm listening to you talk about it. And then this song and this lifting and this joyfulness. I'm going, ooh, tell me more about that. That's interesting.
I think it's not always joyfulness. I think it's just truth. It's getting to a level below the surface.
Yeah.
Not just the thing, but what the thing means or how it will change things.
We're talking about the power of stories today. And if you have a question or comment and want to get involved in this storytelling today, give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. You know the number. 1-877-933-2484. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson today. She'll be back at 4 o'clock. We're talking about storytelling today. I'm talking to Sharon Sampson, and she is an entrepreneur and has a company called Open Book. She helps people tell their stories and tell them well. And right before we went to break, Sharon, we were talking a little bit about people can get stuck in their head sometimes when they're trying to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not maybe serving the listener comment on that. You can do that so well.
Yeah, I think it's just very easy for us to get stuck in our own heads and recount facts, and that we need to communicate in a way that leaves space for people to be part of it, as opposed to communicating in a way that starts and ends with us. And that is really what a story has the power to do, to create space for people to be a character, to be a partner in what you're communicating. So it's the difference of a leader of an organization getting up or an annual report reporting that simply says, this is what we do, period, the end, as opposed to communicating in a way that says, this is what we're going after, and this is what we invite you to be part of, and this is what we can do together. Like, that is a shared story that I can come and be part of. I can come be a co-creator in that story. I can be a stakeholder in that story, as opposed to just observe you doing what you do, you living out your sort of calling and conviction. But that doesn't, if you don't communicate it to me in a way that leaves space and invites me to be part of it, then nothing shifts.
What are some communication buzzwords that make you crazy?
Well, I think story is a bit of a buzzword that can sometimes drive me crazy.
Really? Yes. Is that what you do?
I know, and I'm the biggest offender of it. But everyone sort of talks about stories these days. Everyone talks about the word brand these days. And yet I think those are the two most important words. Mm-hmm. I just think they get misused a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the two biggest offenders. But, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, I don't have any negative words to say about how people are – using jargon.
But if you did have negative words, that'd be kind of fun. We could just sit and gossip a little bit.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions sometimes about what stories are and what brands are.
But I'm sure people show up and say, these are our core values. And I always kind of find that amusing, because what's the difference between values and core values? I mean,
that's actually a great question. We've giggled about that as well, too. I do think that people get caught up a lot of, like, what is our mission statement? And what is our values? And what is our vision? And what is our tagline versus our vision versus our mission statement versus our values?
Mm-hmm. That's when the fights break out, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's really, really exciting stuff. But I just don't get super hung up on, like, those bullet points on a piece of paper. I think that those things can matter, but I think unless they are embedded in a culture that people are sharing and living out together, and unless they're organized around a sense of, this is what we're going after. I mean, you can have a mission statement but not be a mission-driven organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a difference between those things, between words on a piece of paper and an experience that you're sharing and living with others.
Yeah, words on a piece of paper, you know, many companies, churches, they all have it somewhere. I mean, and there seems to be a inconsistency or a, okay, we have our core values, here they are.
Right.
But I don't know, is that really an effective way to, do people read them over every day or?
I think you have to live it out in terms of your culture. I mean, I think the joke is that I think Enron had hanging values in their vestibule of their building that talked about integrity and honesty and accountability as part of their values.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
So, but it's a matter of, are you living those out in your culture? So we, in my business at Open Book, we have four words that we do have hanging on our walls, and we do have on pieces of paper in our offer letters and such, that really are the four things that we want to guide us every day. But they cease to become words on a paper and start to become a shared experience when we together live them out. And I, in my leadership, am accountable to try to reinforce those and embed those into the way we treat each other and the way we operate as a company and as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully people can lead up to me and hold me accountable to that as well, and that we can live that together. So then it becomes not just our four values, but becomes the story of how we do life and work together.
Did you just sneak those four values in?
I didn't say them. Do you want me to say them?
Oh, of course. I thought maybe you worked them in there, and I thought, did I miss them? Because I'm not horribly bright.
They're not rocket science, but the four things that we seek to do every day is we seek to learn something, we seek to help someone, we seek to do good work, and we seek to be grateful. So learn something, help someone, do good work, and be grateful. So when we have wins, we have losses, we have victories or failures, every day we can hold ourselves to the standard of, like, well, did I help someone today? Did I help that client? Did I help that coworker? Did I help that teammate? Did I help that neighbor down the hallway? Did I seek to learn something and try to, and that means I might have failed, I might have messed up, I might have some rockiness here, but I'm learning. Did I seek to do my best work that I could, even if it didn't turn out as I wanted? And was I grateful for the opportunities I had to do all those things today and to be part of this journey that we're on together as a team?
So, sounds like basic marching orders for any Christian.
Well, they're not rocket science, but it's a difference of, are they words on our wall and a nice piece of installation art, or are they part of the way we do life? And that's what the difference is of being, like, driven by hopefully a mission and a culture that's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about beauty and creativity.
Okay.
Because I think that's... That's something that I think is being more celebrated today in churches.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that way anyway. And it concerns me on some level.
Yeah, say more about that. What does that mean?
I think that churches are spending a lot of time maybe trying to market. And I don't know if that's the role of church. Church is to feed the flock, encourage the flock, and then the flock goes out and makes disciples. And hopefully through that process, the people that they have connected with will join them for church versus coming to church because they got marketed to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to grow a church is to be invited by someone who brings you and they say, I want to come back next week.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you know, a year later, they're bringing somebody. So anyway, but beauty and creativity is something that I think is important.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're reflections of God's character.
I do. I agree.
And I think we have a creator God and celebrated the act of creation and what it can generate in people's lives and in the world. And so I think those are values that belong in the church. I do think it's a matter of execution of how they play out and live out. In my line of work, as I talk with churches or I talk with ministries and who want to bring us on for branding or design work or messaging work or such, there's often a stigma that I hear from churches is sort of like, well, we don't want anything to look too good or too slick or, you know, just give us kind of the B-level work. We don't need the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of sometimes of excellence in execution can be sort of frowned upon. And that's always a little bit of a head scratcher to me because I do think that excellence matters, particularly in the church. We do live in a branded world. People are exposed to excellent messages and methods of communication, and I think the church should as well. But to your point, I'm also highly sensitive, sometimes maybe too critical in my heart of people that focus more on the method of execution than on the heartbeat of the story it's representing. So in other words, just design for design's sake or bells and whistles for being cool's sake or presentation for presentation's sake. I'm not interested in that. But beauty and creativity and presentation that's done thoughtfully for the sake of moving people into the gospel and moving people into the mission of an organization, I think there's no place that deserves to be upheld more than within the church versus corporate America.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody ever gets tired of beauty.
I agree.
I think at one point you get tired of a lot of things.
Right.
But beauty is not anything you get tired of.
Right.
That's why you take a vacation to the ocean and you sit and stare at it for 8 hours a day for a week.
Yeah.
Because you can't stop admiring its beauty and its power.
I think we're hardwired for that longing for beauty. I think that's the fingerprints of God within us. And when we did this work for my company, did this work for Tim Keller and his church Redeemer, one of the highest compliments I heard when they were announcing in the congregation about this booklet that we'd put together is that they held it up and they said, this book tells you everything you need to know about this campaign we're on, and this book is beautiful. And we want you to sit and experience its beauty.
Wow.
And that nothing could have been sweeter to me because that sense of beauty being leveraged to invite people into a gospel mission, like that's a joy to get to do.
Mm-hmm.
One story I heard recently that there's a park in New York City that's an old elevated roadway called the High Line Park. And so much time was spent in designing this space to make it beautiful, to make it, there's art and sculpture and gardening and landscaping to make this a beautiful space. And yet, because it's an elevated railway, there's limited entrance points and exit points on it. So people thought when they were building it that it would be a hotbed for crime.
Mm-hmm.
And for bad things to happen. And yet the reality is that there has been almost no crime on the High Line. And they say it's because it's a reflection of a place that is beautiful. And when people are around beauty, when people experience beauty, it brings out virtues within them that are, I think, the imprints of God. It calls us all to a higher good. Beauty has power. Beauty moves people to action. In a way that is very true and real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we do ourselves a disservice to undersell that or to dismiss that or to say, good enough is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it pretty enough as opposed to make it beautiful for a higher good and a common good of calling people into something that's safe, that's lovely, that's inspirational.
And we're not being superficial going that route?
Well, I think it comes down to your intention. Like, I think there's a fine line with all of these things, but I think beauty, the pursuit of beauty, is a noble thing, and it's a matter of what you're using that beauty for, of what you're seeking to use that beauty to call people into.
Well, I think I've heard before, more than once, of an occasion where there's like a youth center at a church, and a new pastor comes in and says, you know, what we got to do is get rid of this horrible couch and this beanbag that's split open.
Right.
And this terrible ping pong table.
Yeah.
And they have no budget.
Right.
And yet they take this youth center and turn it into something that's nice furniture and fun games. And all of a sudden, kids are more respectful. They can't wait to be there. They treat the stuff nicer. And all of a sudden, it becomes a place where not only do they want to be, but they feel excited about where they are. And again, beauty has something to do with it, because I don't think people ever get tired of beauty.
I think that's true, and that's fair. I would concur with that.
So when we're looking at branding, marketing, and we're a ministry and we don't have the resources to maybe hire someone like you with your expertise and the beauty that you can produce, I'm feeling like, oh, well, what do we do now?
What I
want a shoulder to cry on right now.
I think it comes down to just the best practices of being mindful and thoughtful about communicating in a way that leaves space for people to be part of it, and calling people to something beyond the here and now, to a shared future that you can create together. I mean, that's just a universal best practice to embed vision and mission and a sense of imagination into how you communicate. You don't need me for that. You can do that.
What about when people say, this is our mission, this is what we're going to do. If you want to be part of this, you can, but we're going on, we're moving on.
That sounds belligerent.
It does. Well, that was my best belligerent impression. But I've certainly been part of those pitches before, where we have so much determination. Can't you see our determination?
Yes.
And we're going to go ahead with this because this is what God's calling us to do. And you know, you should follow in the steps of obedience and open your wallet and help us do this.
Yeah. I think tone matters along with words matter and presentation matters. So, but it does come down to the sense of, like, if you are just talking at people or if you're inviting people into something. And that's the difference. That's the fine line you cross of communicating, this is what I'm doing, no matter what you say, and I know, and you should just listen to me. That's just that's a monologue that's speaking to a wall. But
you're inviting me in, but I got a busy life. I already got enough stuff on my plate. Seriously. I play ping pong on Friday night, and, you know, I got stuff going on.
You got ping pong.
I'm just
Friday
saying,
night ping pong.
Yeah,
matches.
Of course. But I'm saying there's a lot going on. So when do we try to rattle cages and go, this is important, versus I want to invite you in?
Yeah. Rattling cages versus inviting in. I like the tone there. People are busy and not everybody is called to be involved in everything. But I think all you can do is to, as an organization, as a leader, and as a person, to know, like, this is what is on my heart that I feel called to live out and pursue. And I want to invite you to be part of it. And I'm going to be respectful of your time by being succinct. And I'm going to be honoring of your time, because I'm going to be consistent and say the same thing this time and the next time, so you don't have to take a lot of work and effort to understand what I'm even talking about. And then I lay out ways for you to be part of it. I mean, the heartbeat or the genesis of my business open book was that I would read annual reports, or I'd go to websites for organizations that I knew did great work. I would see pictures of smiling children, and they would use big words like hope and transformation and freedom. And that all sounded good. But at the end of the day, I would finish reading this website, or I'd finish reading this annual report, and I'd say, I think you do great work, and I think I really want to like you, but I don't understand what you do, and I don't understand what you want me to do.
Interesting.
And so that's the difference of, like, communicate who you are, what you do, why you do it, and tell me what you want from me, and to do that in a way that's compelling and respectful, and then see what God does.
So instead of just throwing some of those keywords against the wall and seeing what sticks, hopefully we can be much more intentional.
That's the hope.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about cultivating your personal story with Sharon Sampson. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. She'll be coming up here at 4 o'clock today, so stay tuned. We're talking to Sharon Sampson today. She's the founder of Open Book, which is a storytelling and media company. Did I say that right?
Pretty much. That'll work. Yeah.
And she helps people tell their stories. And, you know, not all of us run a ministry, or not all of us are involved in decision making in terms of how we're going to be telling a story or doing branding for our ministry. But we all have a personal story to tell. And when we tell our personal story, you have to still, I think, do what, Sharon, you shared in terms of a corporate thing or a ministry thing, which is teach people how to invite people in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there going, how can I better tell my story?
Mm-hmm.
What are some things I can pay attention to starting right away?
Well, I think it starts with being honest, and I think it starts, and that includes vulnerability. And that's how you invite people into something, is that you show your cracks and open a door for people to come in. I mean, with when we're working professionally with organizations, you know, no organization or no person wants to be sold a bill of goods. They want to be told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is in our interpersonal relationships, in my life. If I want to talk about what's happening in my life or what God's doing in my life or what I'm learning or what I'm struggling with, if I just sort of make a speech that sounds good but isn't true and touches something in my heart, I think that's a miss. And so I think for any of us in telling our stories in small ways, day to day, or in big ways in terms of seasons of our life that we're walking through, I think it's got to start with being honest about what is true and what we feel, not just what we know, but what we feel and what is part of the way we live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to what we were saying with organizations. They can have values on a piece of paper or on their walls, but if they're not true to how they live out, then there's a misconnection. So mm-hmm. It is in our lives. We can say we believe certain things or that we think certain things, but the way we talk about it has to reflect that.
Okay. Success is often measured by friendship. You know, you look back on your life and you think, mm-hmm. well, you know, I might not have achieved this or that, but look at the friends I have.
Mm.
And your heart leaps because you have people that love you and people that care about you and people that think about you. And Jesus says there's no greater love.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I do really feel that friendship is the primary pursuit of my life. I really feel like it is the calling that God has put on my life professionally, to build an organization that is a group of people who are friends to each other, and that are friends to organizations and ministries that we can serve. And then personally, the opportunity to be a friend and to have been friended by people who's knowing me and loving me, and me being and inviting me to know them and love them, has been the primary shaping influence of my life and the biggest way God has revealed himself to me. And I think a lot of spiritually, the journey I've been on in the last year is really trying to understand and sit in what it means to have friendship with God,
mm-hmm.
and to see myself that I'm called a friend of God, that, and what does that mean, and the high, beautiful calling of friendship. I'm a single woman, and so I've had just opportunities to cultivate really beautiful intimacy and
mm-hmm.
community in ways that aren't necessarily the ways other people cultivate that through marriage or through family as their core cornerstone of that. And I just feel so rich because of it,
mm-hmm.
that I'm able to experience the sort of a richness and manifold perspective of the many characteristics of God because I'm in deeper relationships of intimacy with more people, and I'm just so deeply shaped and enriched by that, and
mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful. So yeah, for me, friendship is a pursuit, it's a calling, it's a passion, and it is in many ways the medium through which I'm trying to live my life professionally and personally.
Mm-hmm. So when you think of God, and maybe you're at this point where you think of God like an angry boss, or no, I'm not talking to you,
yeah.
I'm talking to listeners.
Yeah, yeah. No, I laugh because I've thought that at times as well, yeah.
Or he's a slave driver that whatever it is, you need to do more of,
because mm-hmm.
you're not accomplishing enough.
Yeah.
And you talk about the beauty of friendship and the beauty of God, just
yeah.
to sit and enjoy his beauty, but also to live in his friendship,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a really strong message.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love for you to say more, but you might be out of material on that one.
I'm still trying to live it out and learn it as I go. But yeah, I think for me, I am inclined more towards perfectionism and self-criticism. And so I think for me, the healing balm of grace continues to enter my life by just trying to listen to how God speaks to me,
mm-hmm.
and about me, and finding that in scripture of that his delight in us, and his patience with us,
mm-hmm.
His provision for us, and his nearness to us.
Mm.
And sometimes the biggest words that I sort of whisper to myself in prayer or in moments of stress or tension is just to remind myself that God is with me, that God is with me. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of unknowns and the midst of uncertainties or scary moments, that sense of the assurance of God's presence and that he is with me is sometimes is the most powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And for me, that is a mark of friendship, because when we, all of us who've been through hard times and seasons of loss or grief, and we remember the people who were with us through that.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, physically, spiritually, emotionally, however they were with us, that they made their presence known and we felt not alone in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what God offers us, that he is with us,
mm-hmm.
No matter what may befall us.
You know, that's a beautiful point, but sometimes people aren't content with that, just mm-hmm. to say, you know, God's with you in this, because...
Right.
But I still have my problems, I still have my heartbreak, I still have my disappointment.
Yeah.
And I think you painted a really lovely picture of what it's like just to be in friendship with God.
Yeah.
And just to understand he's there for you.
Yes. I'm still learning how to live it out. And I do think it's very easy to trivialize it and sort of say it in cliche ways. Oh, well, God's with you. Don't worry. Don't mm-hmm. be upset. I think that's a disservice to how God is with us. He's with us in the midst of our pain, in the midst of our heartache, in the midst of our longing. And I think just for me, the ups and downs of starting a company and the uncertainty and oftentimes the loneliness and the vulnerability and the risk that has gone into this,
mm-hmm.
That I have felt most free and most myself by crying out the times that it is hard mm-hmm. and the times that I am lonely or that I do feel vulnerable or that I feel like I'm facing a blank curve. And that in that, I don't have to not do that because God's with me. I get to express that because God's with me
mm-hmm.
and that he sees that and is in that with me. And I can experience his friendship through that.
Mm. Well, you've been building this little company, and it's getting bigger by the day, and
oh,
you've
boy.
Got 9 employees, is that right?
We're a team of 9 now.
Team
yep.
of 9, and they're probably all listening, and the ones that aren't.
Hi, team.
Won't have a job later today, is that right? But, I mean, it's nice to think that you talk about your vulnerability, you talk about how it can be lonely at times, how you can feel the weight of the world on your shoulders, and yet you've got a friend in Jesus alongside mm-hmm. Working you through this process and giving you the strength you need to take each step at a time. Let's go back to Galatians, the verse you started with,
yeah.
and share that one more time, because I think that ties in really nicely to everything you just said.
Yeah. That since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit, to not get ahead of and not fall behind of, but each day to keep in step with what the Spirit is doing, stirring, and leading. That's what I'm trying to do each day.
Well, isn't that what we all should be trying to do each day? Yet that's a hard thing to do, because we
yeah.
always race to the next place that we think we should
especially
be at.
Especially me. I'm in a hurry all the
oh,
time.
Oh, you have to be. You have to be, because you've got so many deadlines. You've got so many ideas out there. And when the ideas are rejected, how do you feel?
Oh, it could be vulnerable. Yeah. I think I'm always having to learn when people are fighting for ideas or fighting me, and the difference mm-hmm. of knowing when to be sensitive and defensive and when not to, and to not be precious or prideful about words or about ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why I believe in teams,
mm-hmm.
That I think a group of people can hold each other in check and can make each other better and can push each other and do better work than any of us can alone.
Yeah.
So,
well, anyone who might be struggling with sharing their faith, their story, or they're in the middle of prayer trying to figure out how to reposition their organization or get their message out. I didn't talk to you in advance of this. Would you be willing to pray briefly?
Oh my gosh.
Or do you want me to? Because I'll
no,
do
I'd
it.
I'd be happy to serve however
right.
I can.
Thank you.
Be part of this. Well, thanks, Phil, for having me. God, we thank you that you are our friend and that you are with us. And I pray that each day that we will be grounded in the reality that Jesus died on the cross for us, and that is the story that is the greatest story ever told, and we get to be part of that and live out a resurrection story in our lives day in and day out. And thanks for your faithfulness to us. Amen.
Sharon Sampson, thank you so much. This has been a very interesting conversation. How we tell stories and how well we tell stories is a really big deal, and as we're going about sharing our personal faith story with people, it's important to invite people in. Let them know that you're broken, that you're vulnerable, that you don't have all the answers, and that you're willing to share the greatest thing in your life, which is Jesus Christ, who has changed and transformed your heart. Sharon Sampson's been my guest today. Her company is Open Book. I think it's openbook.com. Is that right? If people want to go poke around.
Teamopenbook.com.
If you want to poke around her website and check things out. Thanks so much for being here with us today. We just loved having you
Thank
as a
you,
guest.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's been interesting for me. I think it's fascinating. So Susie Larson is up next. Hour 2 of Live the Promise underway in just a few minutes. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.